Hi there, folks, and welcome to Tri-State of Minds, Tri-State at the Plate. Today we're going to be talking about baseball, and we're going to be talking specifically about prospects, as this is our second annual Prospect Spectacular.
It's going to be spectacular.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be absolutely spectacular. And I have to say, somebody pointed out to me last year, we called it the first annual Prospect Spectacular.
Yeah.
And they said, and this is why I've been asking you, are we allowed to call it the second annual? They said, I mean, do you really need to call it the first annual Prospect Spectacular?
We were laying the groundwork.
Well, that was what I thought, yeah. Because I'm letting you know there's going to be more to come. They said there are no other ones yet, so you can't call it the first annual yet.
Who said that?
I think they're right, but...
Yeah, see, that was I was talking to one of my buddies. That was what they said. They said you can't call it the first annual.
Was it Dan?
No, it was not Dan. Although that does sound like something Dan would say. Yeah. So
either way, this is the second annual.
And I think once you make it to the second annual, you could retroactively go back to the first annual and then call it the first annual, right?
Sure.
I'd say.
Because at that point, it does become the first annual.
Sure. I think right. So. Do you want to introduce who's here?
Yeah. So our today's panel going to be a little bit different than last year's panel. Of course, I'm still here. I'm your host, Andy Burdick. Jason Ruggiero, our co-founder, he's here. And we're joined this year by our... I still call him our new staff writer. He's really not that new because he's been writing for a couple months with us now. But new staff writer Chris Bradley is with us.
Hello.
So Chris is going to be talking some prospects with us as well today.
Yeah.
My trifecta. Favorite topic.
So before we get started today, we just want to quickly review. We're going to be talking about prospects and organizing them the same way that we did last year. We're going to be looking at Pittsburgh's and Cleveland's prospects this year. And we're going to organize the prospects as studs, so the top of the farm system. We're going to organize them as projectables, so players who maybe have a higher ceiling but are a little bit riskier. And we're also going to look at contributors. So we have players that are going to be impacting major league rosters this season. And then finally, our last one, we're going to look at players to watch. So these may be guys like towards the back end of the top 20 prospects or maybe on the other end of the top 20 that we didn't include on our lists that are worth keeping an eye on this season. So again, we'll be looking at the studs, the projectables, the contributors, and the players to watch. Now, before we get started today, I wanted to take a second and talk about an interesting topic that I think really applies specifically to the Pirates. And Jason, you can kind of throw your hat in the ring about how you think this may or may not apply to the Cleveland Indians. But I want to talk about market inefficiencies because part of Pittsburgh's rebuilding plan, it seems, has been figuring out how to exploit inefficiencies in the baseball market. Pittsburgh's done a fantastic job, and Chris, I think you can kind of confirm this, of exploiting some inefficiencies in the market up until the last few years when Bud Selig made some changes in the Major League Baseball draft, where Pittsburgh was able to draft players and then end up paying them for what was over slot recommended by Bud Selig.
Ridiculously over slot. In some cases, and you know, we were talking earlier about Josh Bell specifically, and I think that is probably the example you want to go with. And he was paid what, $5 million?
It was somewhere in the realm. It was right around the $5 million mark, and it was for a second round pick. So Josh Bell was a second round pick that ended up going for $5 million, and that kind of seemed like the straw that broke Bud Selig's back there. That was,
yeah.
And
that was after he told every team in Major League Baseball that he didn't want to play or didn't want to play, but he wanted to go to college. I think he had a scholarship to TCU lined up, and that's why he said, you know, I don't want to be drafted by Major League Baseball. I know I've been scouted, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, the Pirates threw $5 million at him. And, I mean, if you're 18 years old, are you going to choose to go to college or $5 million?
I tell you what, I know college will always be there. $5 million might not always be there.
That's correct.
So I think he made the right financial choice, that's for sure.
And you know, it's kind of sad because the guy, you know, he had the projectable talent, but he's got off to an extremely slow start, missing, I think, the entire 2012 season. And then last year, he missed? One of those years he missed, and he came back, and he, you know, started to show a lot of the tools that people were talking about. But, you know, he's a year behind as developmental goes, I guess.
But I think if you look at that, that's one of the areas that Pittsburgh's done an excellent job, or at least until Bud Selig enacted the new rules with the slot money and all that. But, you know, for Pittsburgh to go out and spend $5 million on Josh Bell, you know, yeah, it's a lot of money up front, but what that could turn into, you know, that's really not that much money in the scope of when you're talking about, you know, controlling a player for, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 years.
Yeah.
If Josh Bell ends up reaching his ceiling, you know, maybe a 60, 65 grade prospect with, you know, exceptional power, like a great corner bat, you know, that $5 million all of a sudden, well, you know, that was a great investment. Now, since those rules have been put in place in the Major League Baseball draft, I still think Pittsburgh has done really, really well on exploiting. And I guess I should probably be careful using the word exploiting because of Rene Gallo's involvement in the international market. But of taking advantage of the – that doesn't really actually sound any better when I say it that way.
That's just another way of putting it. But
I think finding loopholes in and making sound financial moves on the international market. I think that's another area that Pittsburgh's done really, really well finding inefficiencies in.
There's that, and I'm going to go a little off topic because it just occurred to me that not only do they play the international market, but I mean they also stood their ground when it came to Appel on the first year of the slot rules were implemented, and they were rewarded with, you know, Austin Meadows the following year.
Right.
You know, I know that's a little off topic of the international thing, but, you know, that just occurred to me now opening this book. And, you know, as opposed to signing Appel over slot, which is what Boris was demanding, and being the first team to break that rule, they said, you know what, go back to Stanford, and then we'll take our supplemental pick next year. And it turns out they got two great picks in the first round with Austin Meadows and Reese McGuire. But yeah, back to the international thing. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, no, that's fine. And I mean, that's just another example of, I think, identifying and to your point, you know, they seem to identify that fairly early on in the game. Like, hey, we're not going to, you know, we're not even going to mess around with this, you know, spending over slot and being penalized for it. We'll just take that draft pick. I mean, I think that's identifying market inefficiencies. I think that's saying, you know what, we'll lose this pick this year, and we'll be rewarded next year and take advantage of it then. Yeah, absolutely. But on the international market, you know, Pittsburgh, you look at the group of international players that Pittsburgh has invested in, and the amount of money that they've invested in it. And when we're talking about money, we're talking about baseball money. The money that they've invested on the international market is not a lot of money relative to what you would spend, you know, on these players if they were coming out of the draft or, you know, something like that. You know, you look at Pittsburgh's international signings and they have Starling Marte, who's in the outfield right now, Gregory Polanco, who's their, you know, their top bat in the farm system. You know, they have Luis Heredia, who they signed at 16, Harold Ramirez, Alan Hansen, you know, their top infield prospect. All these guys were signed internationally, and they were not signed for a lot of money. I mean, we're talking about under $1 million for most of these guys. It's Pittsburgh's done a great job of finding ways to maximize their dollar. And while you might not see it, you know, in the free agent market anymore, you're starting to see it developing down on the farm, which I think is a good thing. And I think it's really helped out their roster construction.
Yeah, I think and I'm going to say something, and I might not be right. I think Luis Heredia was the highest the Pirates have ever done internationally at $2.6 million.
Yep.
On his 16th birthday, no less.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's a good 16th birthday present. But he hasn't quite panned out yet. I mean, I shouldn't say that because he's only 19, but I guess, you know, they're going to give him a few more years because I guess his weight has become an issue.
Yeah, last season he was held back in extended because of his coming into camp out of shape. Now, Jason, I don't know, how does Cleveland do as far as on the international market, you know, with the draft? Is there anything, I mean, is that something where Cleveland, they look to identify maybe some of those inefficiencies and improve their roster that way?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's where, you know, you go back as far as Fausto Carmona, a.k.a. Roberto Hernandez. That's where they signed him. I'm pretty sure they signed Victor Martinez internationally. Johnny Peralta was a guy that they signed at, like, 16 and, you know, stashed away in their Dominican Baseball Academy for years before bringing him over to the stateside leagues. You know, and they're still doing that. I mean, that's where Dorsis Paulino came from, and I believe Eric Gonzalez came from Latin America. So that they're definitely, you know, working in that realm. Francisco Mejia, who has totally exploded in the prospect world over like 100 at bats in the fall league. that's where he came from. So they're working definitely, you know, overseas to identify those guys. They're also adapting their draft day strategy, you know, and they're like identifying players that have a high floor, I should say, and maybe a lower ceiling, who play for cold weather, either universities or high schools, and going after them in order to save some money on slots, which allows them then to go after, you know, the bigger name prep pitchers or outfielders or whatever. You know, that's what happened with Joey Wendell. I mean, Joey Wendell was a pick that everyone assumed was just to save money on slot. And while he was to save money on slot, it wasn't a wasted pick. It was a guy the Indians thought had just been overlooked because he was playing in Division II cold weather university that people weren't really paying attention to him. So that's kind of their approach to, you know, exploiting the inefficiencies of the new draft system.
Huh, interesting. Okay. Well, Nice little discussion there to get the gears all greased up and ready to go. I think it's kind of appropriate, by the way, that we open with a Badfinger song. I'd been pushing pretty hard for that Badfinger song there, Jason, because I feel like Badfinger, one of the most underrated bands ever. Like I don't know how knowledgeable you guys are about your Badfinger, but great band.
Just keep saying Badfinger.
Badfinger, amazing. Go to iTunes, go download some Badfinger, go to YouTube, listen to some of their songs. Badfinger, great band, totally underrated. Very much how I like my prospects. I like the guys that kind of fly underneath the radar. So that's my symbolic opening with Badfinger.
Well, we're gonna start with the guys that don't fly under the radar, right?
Yeah, we're gonna start with the guys that are like Tom Cruise and Top Gun. They're just buzzing the tower, and then we'll get to the under the radar guys after that.
I thought you were gonna say like Tom Cruise and Top Gun, like playing shirtless volleyball.
Yes. Also, not under the radar. Yeah. Just putting it out there in those cutoff denims and no shirts. So let's start today with talking about the studs in each of the farm systems. So Jason, let's go over to Cleveland, and who are the studs in Cleveland's farm system? Who should we be paying attention to?
Well, the two studs in the Cleveland farm system are Francisco Lindor and Clint Frazier, and Lindor, you know, we talked about him a lot last year on this, and we talk about him all the time. He's a guy, he's only 20 years old, and he could stick defensively right now if Asdrubal Cabrera wasn't in Cleveland. He could handle shortstop on a major league team defensively. Now, his hitting, that's where he needs to continue to develop. But the upside on Lindor is that because of the fact that he can stay shortstop long term, it almost doesn't matter, you know, how much more his hit tool develops. Anything on top of what he has is just gravy. I mean, because he has gold glove caliber defense at shortstop. And, you know, I saw an interview with Mark Shapiro where he kind of discussed why they're leaving Lindor in the minors, you know, because there's a lot of people who think, you know, just get Cabrera out of here. Let's get Lindor up here. He's so much better on defense than Cabrera. And Shapiro's rationale was basically like, we told Francisco, you know, there's a finite amount of at-bats you're going to get in the minor leagues. And you need to make sure every one of those counts, because when you come up here, you're going to stay here. And your development is basically over at that point. You know, like, you can develop, but you're not going to get to develop in private on a field in Akron. You're going to be developing in front of thousands of people. And
as a rubber duck.
What's that?
He's not going to get to develop as a rubber duck.
Exactly, right. And there's going to be tons of people you know, watching you and criticizing you. So take this opportunity to lay a great base so that you can come up in Cleveland and excel. And I think the fact that as the Indians are exploring contract extensions with Jason Kipnis, and last night they signed Yan Gomes to a contract extension, we don't hear anything about Asdrubal Cabrera, and that's because everyone's ready for him to leave and Francisco Lindor to take over next year.
I can tell you, after having the opportunity to watch Lindor, you know, a few times in, you know, we saw him, I think we saw him in Mahoning Valley once. Definitely saw him in Lake County a couple times. And then, you know, a handful of times in Akron before he went on the DL last season. His swing is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the shortest, sweetest swings that I've seen in a while.
He hits for average very well right now. Doesn't have a lot of power, but he's 20 years old. So there's the potential for his power to develop a little more. I mean, he's not going to be Johnny Peralta, but he's not going to be Johnny Peralta on defense either.
Right. I mean, if he hits 15 home runs with the defense that he plays, I mean, he's going to be...
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he hits 10 home runs with his defense, you know, they'll be happy.
Right.
I mean, Cabrera hits 15 and plays poor defense, and everyone thinks, oh, he's a power-hitting shortstop, you know. But Lindor is going to be, you know, gold glove defense.
Well, and I think one of the other things, too, that you talked about this last year was his advanced approach at the plate, how you were watching him. I think it was during a spring training game last year, and it was basically like pitch by pitch. You could almost see him like a Terminator in one of the Terminator movies, like he's learning.
Oh yeah, he definitely, you can watch him, you know, develop through the at-bat. I mean, over his whole minor league career, he has almost a 1-to-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio, and it's actually improved as he's gone up. Like when he made it to Akron last year, he actually walked twice as much as he struck out. So... he's got a very advanced approach. You know, everybody calls him a baseball rat. Like, all he thinks about is baseball. He's always in the gym. He's their ticket for the next era of Cleveland shortstops. I mean, Asdrubal Cabrera knows he's not going to be in Cleveland next year. The writing's on the wall.
All right. Let's can we talk about Clint Frazier? Because this is, I think, one of my favorite prospects in the Cleveland Indians system, the Ginger Engine,
yeah,
Ginger Power.
Right, Frazier. They drafted last year out of high school, outfielder. He's got a bright red afro, so that's cool. Everybody loves that. He's only 19. He has, you know, the potential to be a legitimate five-tool player. The thing about Frazier, his floor is lower than Lindor's. So Lindor is graded out as the better prospect. But Frazier's ceiling is higher than anyone in the Indian system, even Lindor. He has plus power. I mean, he has the quickest... He was widely regarded to have the quickest bat speed in the draft last year. His arms are just enormous. Like, his forearms. He's like a lumberjack. And that the benefit of that is if he can't stick in center field, his bat definitely plays in a corner outfield because of that power. And if he can stick in center, then he's basically a little bit slower version of Grady Sizemore with more power and a better arm. So, you know, I'll take that.
I just think you created your next Photoshop art piece with the lumberjack image in
front of you. Yeah, yeah.
I'm just going to leave that there for you to follow through on.
That'll give me something to do on these cold March and April days.
Yeah.
help me get through. Cold. So let me ask you, Jason, out of your two studs that you lumped together in Cleveland's system, do you like Clint Frazier more? Do you like Francisco Lindor more?
I mean, right now I think I'm more excited about Lindor just because he's so close. You know, I know that he might be up in September and he'll probably be starting at shortstop next spring. So he's the guy I'm kind of more excited for in the short term. But in the long term, I'm really excited to watch Clint Frazier this year. I mean, he had a great run in the fall league last year. He clubbing home runs in his first at bat, but also striking out a lot. So that'll be the thing to watch with him. You know, if he can control that, that's where his ceiling really starts to rise, if he can get his plate discipline. But he's only 19 years old, so there's going to be some flaws.
Now, let me remind you, Jason, of last year who you had paired with Francisco Lindor in the stud category. One Mr. Trevor Bauer is noticeably absent from the stud category this season.
Well, he didn't have a very good year last year, but, I mean, I'm still fairly high on Bauer. He's only 23, and he has looked a lot better this spring. So I'm hoping the Tao of Mickey Callaway is working its magic on Trevor Bauer.
All right, we'll get to Bauer a little more.
If not, there's always his rap career.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's got options.
He's got a great career on YouTube rapping.
Yeah.
He's
got options.
Let's talk about Pittsburgh's studs. There is one stud who is noticeably absent from Pittsburgh this year that was in there last year. Albeit for a different reason than Mr. Trevor Bauer. Gerrit Cole graduated to the major leagues, and, well, you know, the rest is history, as he helped us into our first playoff run in 20 years. So we had to find somebody new to throw in our stud category this year. So this year we have Gregory Polanco and Jameson Taillon, both in the stud category for the Pittsburgh Pirates. So I think those are the two, and I haven't seen anything anywhere different. I would be shocked if anyone who watched baseball ever had ranked them either not one or two. So, I mean, it's pretty much just a general consensus around baseball that these are Pittsburgh's top two prospects. Both of them in some capacity are expected to be contributing in Pittsburgh at some point this season. Gregory Polanco he's one of those five tool players. You know, he's considered pretty solid at just about everything. The thing about Polanco that'll be interesting to watch this season when he's down in Indianapolis is how his defense improves, because that was the one area where they said, you know, he could be making some improvements. Would be, you know, the routes he's taking to balls. And I even noticed it in one of the games last year that we saw in Erie when Polanco was with Altoona. There was a soft hit ball to center. Runner on second took off, rounded third to go home. Polanco pulled up with the ball and just kind of clutched it for a second instead of just coming up firing to home. And because he double clutched it, he felt rushed, threw the ball home to try and make a play at the plate, maybe a little too late, and the ball just sailed over the catcher's head. And those from everything I've read on Polanco, from people who watch him obviously a lot more than I do, that seems to be the thing with him is, improving some of those defensive miscues that he has. But yeah, when you're looking at Polanco, I mean, he's that perennial all-star type prospect is what you're hoping he turns into, great bat. He has a great eye at the plate, kind of like Lindor. He's not going to be striking out a lot. He has, pretty solid approach at the plate. Decent power, great speed, fantastic arm. And if he does eventually graduate to Pittsburgh this year, they're going to have three center fielders roaming all of their outfield spots. Chris, anything else I'm missing on Polanco that you want to throw in there?
I was just going to make a little joke pertaining to his defense, is that he should probably maybe take a class with Yasiel Puig and on outfield defense, especially if he's got that powerful of an arm. He might learn a thing or two about missing cutoff men and whatnot. But that aside, I mean, I think you made several good points about Polanco, and one, little tidbit is that, he was first drafted as a pitcher. Well, not drafted, signed as a pitcher, which I just think is ridiculous that now he's slated to be and projected to be one of, the biggest power hitting prospects this year. So I'm pretty excited for him.
Yeah, I think it's another point another good point to bring up also, you mentioned his, you mentioned like he's a tall player. He's like 6'4", 6'5". When I saw him physically, he looks like Vladimir Guerrero his arms are long. His legs are long.
Swing at everything, just like Vladimir Guerrero.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things because of his size. I mean, his swing can get long. And that's one of the things I think that they're going to have him working on in Indianapolis is, pitch recognition, making sure that he's laying off maybe some of those breaking pitches that, he's going to have to lay off when he gets to the major leagues. You don't want a guy going up there who has a way that you can automatically get him out every time. So working on laying off that breaking stuff outside the zone is, from everything I've read, that Neil Huntington's been saying, that's one of the things that they're going to have him work on down in Indianapolis. Now, he'll also be joined in Indianapolis by Jameson Taillon, who was our other stud last year that we talked about. And both Taillon and Polanco I like having those prospects, those prospects as like our top prospects, because I think their ceiling is relatively high, that perennial all-star, but I think their floor is relatively high as well. I mean, even if they don't end up panning out and being that perennial all-star, I still think they're going to be good major league players, very solid contributors.
Well, that's what I was going to say about Polanco. I mean, the worst thing he could possibly be, I guess, is, not to say that Marte is bad, but just, he could just be another Starling Marte. Very fast, little bit of power, and, just above average outfield.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I'd be extremely happy with just that because...
Right, like when you pair that with the defense, that's the other thing. If they're both playing plus defense in the corners there, even if they're not hitting, at least they're contributing, on the defensive side.
Yeah.
But with Taillon... and now that he's got a sore elbow, that's definitely something that we want to make sure we pay, fairly close attention to. But, health issues aside, he throws a fastball that sits, in that like 92 to 95 range. I lost my train of thought there. Curveball, a really heavy curveball.
Yeah, it's not quite not quite Phil Irwin like, but it's still a hammer, that's for sure.
And you know, last year they had him working on that changeup, which is one of the things that Pittsburgh really emphasizes in their farm system, and that's probably one of the things that again they're going to be stressing with him this season, is developing that changeup as well.
Let's hope he learns it faster than Charlie Morton, because I don't know if you saw Charlie Morton's last start. That changeup looked like absolute garbage, and I think one of the best examples is what Chase Utley almost did to it. He almost took it out of the park.
Yeah, you don't want to make a lot of mistakes with changeups, because those those mistakes tend to go far.
Yeah, into the river far.
Yeah, so. Jason, we'll probably talk about this when we get towards the end of the podcast, but I think last year we had a little debate about whose studs we liked up at the top with Bob mediating. Now that we have an attorney on staff, though, I think I might let him do the arguing. I'll mediate this one and let Chris and you go at it for that one.
Need to mediate.
So yeah, studs again with Pittsburgh. Gregory Polanco, Jameson Taillon, both should be starting in Indianapolis. So keep your eyes peeled. Jameson Taillon is going to be a few weeks back, probably missing his first three or four starts, at least, assuming that there's nothing else wrong with his elbow. So keep your eyes peeled on for both of those guys, because they are they're the cream of the crop in Pittsburgh's farm system. Now, Jason, let's go to some of the projectables in Cleveland's system. So who are some of those guys that maybe they have maybe similar ceilings, but you just kind of have to project on them a little bit more because they have some of those lower floors as well?
Yeah, well, two guys that I put in the projectables category are Francisco Mejia and Dorsis Paulino. Paulino was kind of a prospect darling at this point last year, but he had a rough start to his season in Lake County last year. He actually ended up with a .246 average, which sounds bad, but when you know how far he had to come from, that's actually pretty remarkable that he got it turned around to that point. So this will be a big year for Paulino, because he struggled last year in the Midwest League. He struck out 91 times and walked 30 times. And the Midwest League is a difficult hitters league, so we don't want to get too carried away. But, you know, he's probably going to be in high A at Carolina at some point. And that's not exactly a walk in the park for hitters either. So if he can survive these 2 years and get his plate discipline pointed in the right direction, you know, he might see himself work his way back up the prospect rankings. The other guy is kind of in the situation this year that Paulino was last year, and that's Francisco Mejia. He's a 18-year-old catcher the Indians signed out of the Dominican as a 16-year-old. And he had his first taste of the complex leagues in the fall when he was out in Arizona, and he batted .305 with a .348 on base and a .524 slugging. And so, of course, he's just, you know, popping up all over the place, and Baseball Prospectus actually put him fifth in the Indian system, which I think is kind of ridiculous, because you put someone fifth in the Indian system when they have 113 plate appearances in their career. But I mean, he's definitely a projectable, because he projects to be, you know, a lot. But at this point, he only has 100 at bats under his belt.
Okay. So we have now is his last name, is it Mejia, or how are you pronouncing it?
I'm pronouncing it Mejia, but I'm not really sure about that. It is M E J I A.
As a Hispanic, I mean, the J is silent, but I think it can go either way, because, you know, whatever.
Well,
seriously,
it's gonna
usually what ends up happening is like 5 years after everybody's been pronouncing their name incorrectly, they'll be like, oh, this is how you say my name?
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, okay. All right, like, thanks.
I was watching the Indian spring training game the other day, and the Padres announcer kept saying, Azdrubal Cabrera. And it's like, I don't know. It's not how Tom Hamilton says it, but that doesn't mean it's not right. I don't know.
There's some unfamiliar syllables in these names.
Yeah. Those were the same announcers that later in the game when Tony Wolters was catching, they were talking about Tony Wolters converting from shortstop. And as they were doing it, he took his mask off and like wiped the dirt out of his eye. And the Padres announcer said, "And he's a real good-looking young man." It's like, okay.
He's a handsome guy.
It's like all these people went to the Tim McCarter School of Broadcast or something. That's what
Yeah. So then I was going to talk about two relievers that the Indians have that are very projectable. One is Austin Adams, who's been bouncing around the Indian system for a while. Had some injuries. His main attribute is that he can throw over 100 miles an hour. So that's always nice. And the other guy, though, is Kyle Crockett, who they actually just drafted last year. And he's already made his way to AA. And he's a lefty. Doesn't really have overpowering stuff, but he does strike out a lot of batters. He was the University of Virginia's closer. And in college last year, he struck out 71 batters and walked 7 over 58 and a third innings. And for the Indians last year, over 3 different levels, because he played at Mahoning Valley, Lake County, and Akron.
I thought he was with Akron last year, wasn't he, at some point?
He ended with Akron, yeah. Over those 3 levels, he pitched 24 and two-thirds innings, allowed only 1 earned run, struck out 32 batters, and walked 5. So he's definitely, you know, a projectable arm. And I wouldn't be surprised if he makes it to the majors this year, honestly.
He's doing all that with not a lot of velocity, you said?
He has, like, a low 90s fastball, and, like, he comes at you from a three-quarters kind of arm slot, sweeping kind of low slider. Yeah. That's pretty much it. So he's definitely a bullpen arm. He could be a loogie guy, but that he wasn't used that way in college, and I mean he didn't have any trouble last year in college or the minors getting right-handers out, but you know that'll come with time, I guess. But he's definitely a lefty option. I mean, like, he is right on Nick Hagedone's heels as far as being the next lefty in the minors if somebody falters. He's got to be making Nick Hagedone buy, like, cases of antacid, because Nick Hagedone can't get it done, and this guy was in college last year and is up to Akron already. Then I just want to touch on two more things. One is Tyler Naquin, who, of course, was the Indians' first-round pick in 2012. And Naquin's an interesting guy in that he didn't get a lot of love as a draft pick when he was originally taken. There was a lot of people who thought the Indians were kind of going for the high floor, low ceiling type, you know, the safe pick. Now, I think
the Tony Sanchez type draft pick, if you will.
Yeah, you could say
Pittsburgh fans are familiar with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there was a lot of frustration at the time because the Indians had just the year before drafted Lindor, and people thought they were breaking out of that kind of mold, you know. And I think, though, really what it was is the Indians were identifying that they were pretty weak in center field and outfield in their minor leagues, and they thought this was a guy that could fill a hole fairly quickly because he was an advanced college bat. Now, he looked kind of rough last year at Akron, but he only got 85 plate appearances. I know the day we saw him, he was kind of getting fooled by some breaking stuff late in the season. But
We did see him mash a home run.
We did see him mash a home run another night.
Yeah.
We kind of saw the good and the bad of Naquin over those 2 days. There's some disappointment in Naquin because people thought as a college bat, which people were saying he had the best hit tool in that draft, they're a little disappointed that, like, last year at Carolina, he struck out 112 times and walked 41 times. People were expecting a little bit more than that. But he does have a lot of line drive contact. Like, when he has when he barrels the ball up, he barrels it up. You know, he's either swinging and missing or making solid contact. Each of his minor league seasons, he's hit 30 doubles and 6 triples. So he doesn't have a lot of home run power, but he has a lot of gap power. And he
had a great compact swing. I mean, we were right behind home plate. We had a chance to see it really close up. I mean, the swing, it was a great swing.
Yeah, and I think that's why people were kind of surprised how many strikeouts he was racking up, you know, because he's such a compact swing. But as Chris and I were talking before we started recording, you know, when you look out in the future and you see Michael Bourne limping around with his hamstring injuries, it's comforting knowing Tyler Naquin is quickly working his way up. You know, he's already spent, a third of a season in Akron, and he'll be ready probably next year, really. I mean, I would expect him to start at Akron and then be promoted to Columbus and maybe be up in September even.
Yeah, you might see him as a September call-up when the rosters expand, just to give him a few, you know, at-bats. I mean, actually, it'll probably depend on what the AL Central race is looking like at the time.
Exactly.
As well as Michael Bourne injuries.
Yeah.
A Twitter hashtag at this point.
And see how well Niger Morgan pans out.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about T-Plush. Naquin, I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, Naquin did have a really strong fall league. He had, like, 800 OPS, I think.
Didn't he have an 18-game? Well, not 18. How many? Yeah, wasn't it, like, an 18-game hit streak or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, so he had a really good fall league. So hopefully that transfers over to this year. He has an amazing arm. It's plus-plus arm from the outfield. So, we should be seeing Tyler Naquin before too long in Cleveland. The last little bit of projectables I want to talk about is, if you follow the Indian system at all, you know that the last couple of years they've built a lot of up-the-middle positional talent, but they didn't have a lot of starting pitching depth. And they've really kind of rededicated themselves to filling those holes in the last two drafts. Like, for example, last year, they took Frazier in the first pick. They lost their second and third pick for Bourne and Swisher. And then in the next 7 picks, they took pitchers. And so they did the same thing in 2012. And so there's a whole slew of young pitchers that are going to get their first exposure, you know, this year, because sometimes when you draft a prep pitcher, they spend a lot of time in extended spring training and then maybe go out to a complex league in the fall, and it's a year before they're exposed to, you know, Mahoning Valley or Lake County. So this year, you know, we're going to get to see, like, full season debuts from guys like Kieran Lovegrove and Mitch Brown, hopefully Dylan Howard, Jake Sisko, see how they pan out. That's from 2012. In 2013, they drafted guys like Sean Brady, Shane Casey, Kenny Matthews, Thomas Pannone. They drafted, we're calling him Dace Keim. Is that what we're calling?
I think we're agreeing on Dace Keim. That's how you
D-A-C-E
pronounce it.
D-A-C-E-K-I-M-E.
What's his name?
D-A-C-E-K-I-M-E.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess you would pronounce that the way it looks.
That's what we're going with.
Yeah, we're going with Dace Keim.
Kyle Dace?
I don't know. He's American.
Okay, American.
Yeah.
I was going to go as far as say Dace or something, but I guess not.
Yeah,
that's what I thought. I was wondering, like, well, if we could figure out is where he's from internationally, maybe that'll shed some light. Yeah, he's from America.
Yeah. The Pirates actually drafted him 3 years ago. And he chose to go to Louisville. So
nobody should ever choose to do something like that.
Yeah. But the point is, you know, the Indians have a lot of pitchers that are going to kind of sort themselves out this year. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. You know, who separates themselves from that large pack of untested arms? Hopefully someone.
Yeah, that'll definitely give Indians fans something to watch. So let's talk about some of Pittsburgh's projectables, and I think this is arguably the most fun part of Pittsburgh's farm system to keep an eye on, because we have so many players who have higher ceilings, but also have some very low floors. You look at, you know, one of the biggest guys to make that jump last year was Tyler Glasnow. You know, he in Low A, West Virginia last season just had a phenomenal season where he threw 111 innings, struck out 164 batters. You know, he separated himself from the rest of the prospect pack. You know, just about everywhere he jumped up into like the top three prospects. But again, you know, great talent, you know, super high ceiling. I mean, people now are saying like, oh, well, you know, this kid could be, you know, that Jameson Taillon type pitcher, but also an extremely low floor, you know, where he could kind of flame out. And this season he also, you know, as we touched on last podcast, he's jumped on the injury bandwagon. And he's had some lower back issues to start off the year. So it's looking like his start in High Bradenton is going to be a little bit delayed. But that's probably the biggest, most notable projectable. When you start looking at some other projectables that we have there, we also have fellow pitcher Nick Kingham, who, although he doesn't have the same ceiling per se, I think he's a little bit safer floor type player, and he's another one of those players where you know, I think he was drafted in 2010, and you know, Pittsburgh paid over slot to make sure that they got him. But yeah, as you know, his fastball, it touches like the mid 90s, the high 90s. You know, that's about where it's gonna max out at. But, you know, he's got a pretty good feel for pitching already. You know, last year he made it to Double A Altoona. He split half the season in Bradenton, half the season in Double A Altoona. You know, he strikes out like around a batter an inning. You know, he's got such great leverage because these pitchers that they have, you know, Glasnow and Kingham are both like 6'5", 6'6".
They're big righties. Big. Yeah.
So, I mean, their fastballs have this crazy downhill plane. You know, and like you can go check out, you know, videos of them on YouTube, and it's like you can imagine what it must be like looking at these guys from the batter's box where you see a, you know, a 95 mile an hour fastball coming out of a 6'6" hand. I mean, it's kind of frightening to watch. So you know, that's another kind of projectable guy. I think Kingham is a little bit safer than Glasnow. I just don't think he has that, maybe necessarily that ceiling of Glasnow.
I think Kingham's probably, you're right, safer. And, you know, I see him in the middle of the rotation in the near future, especially, you know, with hopefully Charlie Morton blowing up this year. Yeah. I shouldn't say hopefully. I really don't like Charlie Morton. But, I mean, you know what I mean, though? I mean, I see him in the future rotation that is, you know, Cole, Taillon, Kingham. I mean, well, maybe even Glasnow, then Kingham. But as you said before, Glasnow definitely is a little bit riskier but has a higher ceiling.
Yeah. So,
but as for all intents and purposes, they're like the same pitcher.
Right, but yeah.
Extremely tall and throw extremely hard.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, I think pegging Kingham is like a solid, yeah, number three pitcher in Pittsburgh's rotation is definitely, you know, that's kind of like you're hoping he's one of those type players. You know, he's not gonna be maybe that Jameson Taillon number two, you know, but he probably should be a solid contributor in your rotation.
Yeah.
Luis Heredia is the other arm. You know, he's been on Pittsburgh's radar since he was, you know, he signed at 16. You know, we already touched on how he didn't have a great spring last year, so just kind of keeping an eye on him. You know, again, another big, you know, he's 6 foot, big tall wise and big wide wise, I guess, if you listen to what they had to say about Heredia last spring. But you know, just another guy, he throws, you know, low 90s, touches mid 90s, so keeping an eye on Heredia is still worth it because, you know, like Chris mentioned, he is only 19. But I think the bats in the projectable category for Pittsburgh are going to be the most fun to watch. And it's kind of like how Jason said, you know, Cleveland had that glut of pitching where you're looking like what kind of guys are going to separate themselves from the pack. And I think Pittsburgh has a whole group of players that are going to have to do the same thing because Pittsburgh's done such a great job of developing, you know, offensive players specifically in the outfield. You look at players like Josh Bell, you know, who we have already talked about. We have Harold Ramirez, Barrett Barnes, and then our two most recent additions, we have LSU outfielder Jacoby Jones and prep outfielder that we got, as Chris also mentioned, for Mark Appel not signing, Austin Meadows. So, I mean, we have, you know, like five outfield bats, you know, that all grade like right around that 55, 60, 65 on the 20 to 80 scale. You know, some of their floors, I think, are a little bit higher and lower depending on where you're looking at. But, I mean, they're all extremely talented, extremely, extremely toolsy type players.
Yeah.
So I think that'll definitely be something just to keep an eye on this season with those guys is how those outfielders develop. I think Meadows and Chris, I'm assuming you'd probably agree. Meadows is the one that everybody's going to have their eyes on this season as far as watching how he handles, you know, full season.
He tore it up initially. So you're absolutely correct. It will be interesting to see how he reacts as he moves higher and higher and, in each level of the minors and how he adjusts to that as well. And, you know, I have high hopes for him, but it should be interesting to see what will happen because he really did just, you know, hit the ground running last year and it was actually rather fun to pay attention to.
Yeah. I mean, he had a little stint in Jamestown. He played, I think, four or five games in Jamestown last year. So, and I'm assuming he's starting out probably in West Virginia.
I think so. He had 22 plate appearances at Jamestown.
Yeah.
Not quite sure what a jammer is to this day, but that's a pile of grapes with a baseball bat.
Yeah. It's a Jamestown thing, I guess, apparently.
Yeah.
So let's move on, Jason, to Cleveland Indians contributors. Who are the guys that you can look at that could be impacting Cleveland's major league roster this season?
Okay. I did want to amend. I forgot a couple guys in my glut of starting pitchers. I mentioned all the recent guys, but I did want to throw in three guys that have been working their way up a little bit already. Two Seans, Sean Morimondo and Sean Armstrong, and Luis Lugo. They're the guys that are already in high A or double A. You know, so they're like, they're going to be interesting to watch because they're going to hopefully bridge that gap for us before we get to that wall of arms we just drafted.
Right, yeah.
Sean Morimondo's interesting because, one, he has a great mustache if you Google image search him. But secondly, he pitched in high A last year in Carolina, threw 135 innings. Struck out 102 and had a 3.73 ERA. So he held his own there last year. So, you know, guys like him, Armstrong missed a lot of last year with a hand injury, but when he was back, looked all right. And Luis Lugo is a big lefty out of the international market that they signed and have been working his way up for a while now. So that'll be – I just wanted to throw them in there. As far as contributors, my first one is CC Lee, who, if contracts and service time and different things didn't matter, would probably be in Cleveland right now. He's a bullpen arm that probably would have been in Cleveland last year if he hadn't got Tommy John surgery 2 years ago. But he's a guy that can impact the Indians bullpen right now. He has kind of this Joe Smith arm slot with kind of a downward sinking two-seamer. So he's devastating to righties because he throws a plus slider on top of that. He's working on a split change, which hopefully will make him, you know, not just a right-handed only weapon. He lost out on the final bullpen spot to Scott Acheson pretty much just because they wanted someone they could abuse in that final slot, and they didn't want to put CeCe Lee there. But CeCe Lee will probably be up at some point this year. If Vinny Pesano pitches like he did last night in that spring training game, it might not be too long before we see CeCe Lee. He also has a, you know, I mean, how can you get a better name for the Indians? CeCe Lee. What are the chances of that? But yeah. Next guy was Cody Anderson, who is probably their most advanced arm behind Trevor Bauer. And some people prefer Cody Anderson to Trevor Bauer because Anderson's had more success. he's farther behind, though. He only made it to Akron for 3 starts last year, which those starts weren't too impressive, but he did make 23 starts in Carolina last year with a 2.34 ERA and struck out 112 batters, 31 walks. So he'll start in Akron this year. That'll be definitely someone we want to watch. He's a big right-hander. You know, he looks to be one of those durable middle-of-the-rotation or back-of-the-rotation kind of guys. Mid-90s fastball. When he's doing well, people are making bad contact. If he can start to develop some of those off-speed offerings, his secondary pitches he has, he could definitely, you know, rise to a middle-of-the-rotation guy. If not, he's probably more of a back-of-the-rotation guy. But a big right-hander who eats innings cheap at the back of your rotation isn't necessarily a bad thing to have lying around.
Yeah, you could have worse.
Yeah. Especially.
All right, like, now let's get to can we get to my 2 favorite prospects, Jason?
Yeah, I was going to make a disparaging comment about Zach McAllister, but I'll just...
Okay, all right, go ahead and throw Zach McAllister.
I pretty much just made it right there, so it's just kind of insinuated. He hasn't looked good this spring at all. But anyways, Jesus Aguilar, your boy.
Oh, there he is.
6'3", 250, first baseman.
Man is thick.
Last year in Akron, he repeated Akron last year. And he never, since about, what was it, 2011, when he was in Lake County, he hit 19 home runs, and he's never matched that total since. And people, I think because of how huge he is, just imagine him as like Prince Fielder, a right-handed hitting version of Prince Fielder, and he doesn't do that, and so he gets constantly downgraded. And he racks up a lot of RBIs, and of course, people discount, you know, those RBIs as just an opportunity stat. And I sympathize with that, but of course the fact of the matter is someone was on base and he got them in. I mean, you don't want to like discount someone who doesn't get RBIs because maybe they weren't getting the opportunity, but I think you should give credit to someone who actually is accumulating them, especially when they only hit 16 home runs and drove in 105 runs in Double A. Now, last winter, he went out and took care of all those home run criticisms by absolutely destroying the ball in the Venezuelan Winter League, hitting 18 home runs in 58 games. He looks pretty lost in spring training this year. I don't know if it was just because he was exhausted, because he did play about 180 games last season between winter ball and Akron. But he's repeated Akron last year, so I'm going to guess he's going to go to Columbus. So that will be an interesting step for him. Because while, you know, there's always those guys that mash in Columbus, like Lonnie Chisenhall, there's also, you know, guys like, Trevor Bauer and Jameson Taillon hanging around AAA levels. And it'll be interesting to watch Jesus Aguilar learn to bat against them, you know, to see if he's exposed in any way or if he can continue to hit for a little bit of power and drive in runs.
Yeah. And I mean, he does walk, you know, he has a great,
he does walk. Yeah.
OBP.
Yeah,
that's another thing that plays in his favor.
He had a 350 OBP last year, and that was his lowest since he played 31 games with Kinston in 2011.
Yeah.
The year before in Akron, he had a 402 OBP. So, you know, it'll. He's one of those guys you wonder if he can actually stick at first base in the majors, or whether he'll be more of a DH type. But I'm going to be curious to watch him at Akron this year, or at Columbus this year, and see if he ever gets the call up, whether it's September, or if, you know, Swisher gets injured at any point or anything like that, will Aguilar get the call? Last guy is one of my favorite Indians prospects, Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, I love this little fella too.
Yeah, and last year, you know, the Indians' infield prospects is pretty crowded with Ramirez, Paulino, Wendell, Rodriguez, now Gonzalez. And they showed everybody that they thought Ramirez was the best of the bunch because they had him completely skip high A as a 20-year-old and jump right to Akron. And then after 113 games in Akron, he skipped Triple A and went right to Cleveland. And he didn't just come to Cleveland as a September call-up because they made a point of calling him up before so they could put him on the playoff roster. And I'm pretty sure he did appear maybe just as a pinch runner in that playoff game, but they wanted him to be available in the playoffs. That's how much they thought of him. Defensively, he can play second, short, and he's getting a little bit of experience at third. He really fits best as a second baseman, which is a little unfortunate since we have Jason Kipnis. But, you know, he's probably ready to be like a Mike Avilas type at any time. I think they'll probably put him at AAA to start the year, get him a little seasoning there, because while he has a good contact rate, like through the minors, his batting averages are 325, 354, 364, 354, and then 272 last year at Akron. They'd like to see him develop, you know, some more gap-to-gap power because he's not a home run hitter, but he's in double digits in doubles each season in the minors. And they're hoping, you know, as he fills out as just a 20-year-old, he will develop a little more gap power. But I think, you know, he could step into that Mike Avilas, Elliot Johnson kind of role at any point and help the Indians out. He helped them out last year down the stretch, so he's definitely an exciting prospect.
Yeah. Now moving on to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has a couple players that are ready to contribute. One of the players that we left off, and we had some people asking us why Tony Sanchez wasn't on our prospect list again this season. You know, Sanchez, even though he didn't exhaust his eligibility last season in Pittsburgh, we know Sanchez is going to make the roster as a backup catcher. We already saw him last year. So I didn't include him on the list of prospects again this year, just because we know what he is. But so Tony Sanchez, obviously, is going to be serving as Russell Martin's backup with Chris Stewart's knee injury. We have Brandon Compton, who I believe, Chris, he's been optioned to Indy already, correct?
Should be the fifth starter, but for some reason they spent $5 million on the guy with the hat angle.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
You know, I know at first I was, you know, kind of hesitant about the signing, but after watching him in spring, I don't really know what the heck they're doing. Compton, you know, he came up last year and he had a couple of pretty good starts. You know, why not let him pitch in the fifth starter slot until, you know, Jameson Taillon's ready? Because, well, that's assuming he doesn't have any serious elbow issues. But, I mean, he fits the mold of the Pirates pitching staff. He's a ground ball heavy pitcher. And, you know, watching him in spring training, I saw some control issues, but not anything serious. And I don't know. I'm not a GM, so I can't really, you know, say that it was the wrong move to sign Volquez. But, you know,
I'll say it.
Jason has no problem saying that.
I'd like to see some of the younger, you know, back of the rotation, middle of the rotation guys get a chance, at least to just fill some innings, as opposed to wasting $5 million.
And right. I don't want to get off on that subject because Lord knows we get off on it. But to me, that's the point of these guys. Like, some of these guys will never amount to more than a back of the rotation innings eater, right? That's their ceiling. But if you can get that out of them to fill a gap like that and only pay them, you know, $400,000 or whatever, isn't that a better deal when you have limited resources than spending $5 million to fill an innings eater slot?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, you're absolutely right. And that's, you know, the logical, like, conclusion that I'm pretty sure 95% of the world has come to. I think all of us should really start playing the lottery, you know, so we can maybe hit it rich and then buy a baseball team. But that, you know, that's just my opinion that subject.
I would love that.
I don't know if I could offer Bob Nutting enough money, though, because he said on repeated occasions that he wants to keep the Pirates for his children, not really disclosing whether or not his children are interested in.
Oh, man. That's a bad recipe right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have Compton, who will be contributing. Stolmy Pimentel was actually out of options. So when it came time for Pittsburgh to make some roster decisions yesterday, they actually DFA'd Vin Mazzaro. So there's a good chance Mazzaro is going to end up being released here. I think, what is it, within 10 days you have to release?
Yeah. Yes. Or he gets outrighted to the minors, correct?
Yeah.
Unless it's not as – if it's your first outright. If it's like your second or something, you can declare free agency.
Okay.
That's which I don't think he can yet.
It's probably his first.
Yeah.
I disagree with that move. I don't like Vin Mazzaro, never have, but he's another guy that he fit the mold of the pitching staff, you know, ground ball heavy, and he did an admirable job last year in the bullpen. And I know a lot of Pirates bloggers and fans are really high on Stolmy, but watching him in spring training, he didn't really impress me that much. So, you know, it started out as this, like, you know, war drum for him to be the fifth starter, and then it's kind of gone out with a whimper because he hasn't performed.
Yeah, and I think, and this is just kind of my opinion based on what I've seen with Pittsburgh, the reason that Mazzaro ended up getting the axe was because they have Genmar Gomez, who's already there, that can kind of fill in those tough kind of spots. You know, last season it was Gomez and Mazzaro that came in a lot of, like,
long relief.
Yeah, games where Jonathan Sanchez was getting ejected before he could make an out. And yep. So, you know, now that they have Gomez there and, you know, Pimentel had no other options, you know, I guess Mazzaro didn't make that cut. And then we have two other bats to keep an eye on that'll probably end up contributing at some point this year. Andrew Lambeau, who, you know, a lot of people thought was going to end up being the platoon partner for Gabby Sanchez, had an awful spring. He did not look good at the plate. So he ended up, he was optioned to the minors. And Jaff Decker was also optioned to AAA. Yeah.
Jaff, not Jeff.
Again, confirming my belief that there have been zero successful Jaffs in the history of the world. So he's really going against history there.
Fun trivia question. Which player on the Pirates who happens to not be a position player has more extra base hits than Andrew Lambeau in spring training?
Ooh, I don't know who. Now I'm curious.
Wandy Rodriguez.
Oh, jeez. The arthritic elbow attack.
Not only does he have more extra base hits in spring training, but he has more home runs than Andrew Lambeau in spring training. And I know spring training stats mean nothing, et cetera, but I mean, come on.
Well, that kind of means something. When Wandy Rodriguez has more home runs than you in spring and your job is to hit a baseball, that's bad.
Yeah. And his job is to sling the said baseball.
Yeah. So those are the big contributors that you'll see bouncing up and down throughout the course of this season. Jason, let's wrap up Cleveland's prospect watch here with some of the players to watch. So players that we haven't covered on that are worth keeping an eye on. I know who's number one on your list.
I'm gonna come to him last, actually.
Oh, you're saving him. Okay. Okay.
Where there's discussion. First off, one guy I want to watch is Tony Wolters. I'm excited that he's going to be placed in Akron, I'm guessing, this year. And to be able to see him pitch, or catch, rather. Ugh, not pitch. He's not changing positions yet again.
Again.
I'm excited to, actually lay eyes on him as a catcher and see how that transition is going. He caught last night at the end of a spring training game, and he definitely wasn't the reason Vinny Pastana was getting rocked. So that's good. It's not like he was like fastball down the middle. That's what I'm calling right now. He looked good behind the plate, but I'll be interested to watch him in Akron this year. And I will point out for people, the Akron Rubber Ducks now are being added to the teams in the MILB TV package. So that means that if you get MILB TV, you can see Francisco Lindor, Cody Anderson, Tony Wolters, a whole slew of good prospects, Joey Wendell, a little bit of Tyler Naquin, maybe Luis Lugo at some point. That might be a good deal because you can get to see Francisco Lindor from your couch. But one other guy want to get eyes on this year is Eric Gonzalez, who's another middle infielder in the Indian system. And they thought enough of him that they put him on the 40-man this year, even though he was just at high A last year. And he got to play in quite a few spring training games, and he had a nice winter ball campaign. So that's somebody to keep an eye on. Then just a couple outfielders real quick. Bryson Miles and Anthony Santander. They're kind of in that Carlos Moncrief kind of vein, but younger and less polished. So those are two names to watch out for. And I think Miles will probably be at Akron this year. And one name that I actually didn't, that you guys don't have on your agenda, but I wanted to add, is that one of the late picks the Indians made in last year's draft was a high schooler named Salento Sales. And he set he broke every high school stolen base record in the country. He stole 103 bases in 104 attempts.
My God.
And he stole 12 bases in a game once. And wow. He grades out as an 80, obviously, on speed, but that's pretty much it right now as far as, tools.
Hopefully you get on base because, that's going to be Billy Hamilton's problem, getting on base.
Exactly. So that's kind of a guy you might want to, keep one eye on to see what he's doing. I'm not sure where he's going to be placed. I can't imagine as a high schooler. He'll probably start an extended spring training and go to Mahoning Valley short season. But, it'll be really fun to see if he can get on base and then see what he does once he gets there. And then the last guy is Trevor Bauer, Andy's favorite prospect, I know. Bauer outage, yeah. He's going to be in Columbus. He's probably after TJ House. Well, no, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if they call TJ House up ahead of Trevor Bauer at any point. I think that would be basically based on how Bauer is faring at the moment. But behind Josh Tomlin, it's TJ House and Trevor Bauer, and probably in the opposite order. So he's... supposedly reworked his whole delivery. He looked a lot better this spring. I will attest to that. He was throwing a lot harder, that's for sure, and his control looked a lot better. He was getting into upper 90s this spring. And working down in the zone more, throwing more first pitch strikes. If he could get himself straightened out, then I think the Indians can easily tell Justin Masterson to kiss off. But if he looks rough, watching Masterson walk away is going to be really difficult.
All right. Well, Pittsburgh has a couple players to keep an eye on as well. Gift Ngope,
the
he offers great glove, and actually a lot of outlets.
Not a bad bat either.
What's up?
Not a bad bat either. I mean, that's one that could develop into a pretty decent bat.
Yeah, a lot of outlets last year said he was one of the best gloves in minor league baseball. And yeah, I mean, Pittsburgh promoted him aggressively, and at one point they had him up in Double A Altoona last year. Actually, to start the season, he was in Double A Altoona last year, correct?
Yes.
And then he was just a bit overwhelmed.
Kind of stagnated a little bit.
Yeah. So he ended up actually going back to Bradenton last season, High A, you know, where he performed well with the bat. So, you know, he's a little bit older, but with that great glove, you know, he'll have a chance to be a major league contributing player at some point. My personal favorite, my pet project, Adalberto Santos. The guy knows how to get on base, and I think he'll be contributing somewhere, you know, kind of like in that utility player type role, I think, sometime soon. I really think Santos is going to be a major league contributing player just because he knows how to get on base. I know there's questions about his defense, and he offers, you know, basically no power. But I think Santos has a chance to be a really helpful contributing player on somebody's major league team. Willie Peralta has a ton of power. He should be. I don't know where he's starting this season. Have you seen where he's at, Chris?
I think he's going to start at Double A. Last year, and I think. Well, let me check. Baseball America says he will probably begin at Double A Altoona. So. I mean, that's a pretty good authority.
I'd listen to those guys, I guess. We have Jin Dae Jeong, who is another international signing. Last year, he was up in short season Jamestown. He's another one of those catchers. I'm a big fan of catchers as well.
Pirates are too, because they have so many. They're moving Wyatt Matheson to third base.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Matheson's getting the old bump to third. We have Clay Holmes, who's undergoing Tommy John surgery. So he'll be out for the whole year. But, you know, he's still, hopefully when he comes back, we'll have himself back on track. And then Jason's personal favorite, we have Stetson Alley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No neck.
Yeah. Yeah. Ricky Vaughn found a way to turn his pitching career into a hitting career. So he's definitely worth keeping an eye on. And then last year, Pittsburgh drafted another prep catcher, kind of playing off Wyatt Matheson getting moved to third. They drafted Reese McGuire last year, who everybody thinks Reese McGuire could be one of the best defensive catchers in minor league baseball. You know, he comes from, a big baseball family, you know, great arm behind the plate, already kind of understands how to call a game. You know, apparently he's got these amazing pop times where he's like 1.8 seconds down to second base. Yeah. So
the guys at Baseball Perspectives are pretty high on him. They mention him in the same sentence as Austin Hedges. And he's, as you know, we'll probably know, he's the Padres top prospect, I believe, and also a catcher.
Right. Yeah. One of the best catching prospects in baseball. So, definitely keep an eye on Reese McGuire and his progress as well. So let's wrap up with our with our little debate. Do Chris, you wanna square off with Jason here on our studs for the Pirates organization?
I mean, if I'm being drafted to do so, I suppose I will.
All right, so I wanna know, and we'll start with Chris first. You can state your point, Jason. You will conclude this debate here. Which of the farm systems top two studs do you think is the best? So we're looking at Pittsburgh or Cleveland. State your points as to why you think your farm system that you're selecting with their studs is better and why? Chris, let's start with you.
Well, I'm going to start off by saying that this is unfair to begin with. I mean, it's obviously the Pirates. not only have, you know, several of, you know, the baseball world's, you know, top publications such as Baseball Prospectus and Baseball America have ranked the Pirates system as number one out of all 30 farm systems. And so, I mean, it's hard to say that there are only two studs because, I mean, if you want to go deeper, we can mention the two pitchers we mentioned earlier, Glasnow and Kingham. I mean, if Alan Hansen figures it out this year, Austin Meadows, and, you know, going back to the top two, Polanco, he should be in the majors by June. He's got room to grow into his humongous frame. And watching him during spring training, I think it took him maybe like three steps to get to first base. So, you know, and assuming Tyone does not get seriously injured, or assuming that elbow doesn't evolve into something worse, you know, he's going to be in the rotation as soon as, you know, head angle guy explodes, which he will. And, you know, I feel like he's going to contribute at the same level Gerrit Cole did, and the Pirates will probably march back into the playoffs. And I shouldn't say march, I should say sneak by way of the wild card, because that's consistent with my predictions. And that's, you know, I'm not disparaging the Indian system because they have an excellent farm system. And, you know, the top two guys, going to my predictions as well, I picked Lindor to be Rookie of the Year. I don't think he stays in the minors long, and I don't think Jason thinks he's going to stay there long either. And they have a few guys that are probably Major League ready right there at the top. Top five, I would say, are all Major League ready. And Lindor, Frazier, Bauer, Naquin, and Anderson, they're all ready to go. And but as a Pirates fan, and logic is just going to dictate that the Pirates farm system is better at this point in time.
Very excellent points, Chris. Jason, counter.
Well, I can't argue that overall the Pirates system is not better, because they have much more starting pitching, you know, in the upper levels of their system than the Indians do. But if we focus on just Lindor and Frazier versus Polanco and Talion, my argument would be that we've got two up the middle talents in the Cleveland studs versus one pitcher, which is great because he's top of the line, front of the rotation kind of pitching prospect. But, you know, we're talking about in Cleveland, Gold Glove shortstop with excellent on-base skills and a power-hitting center fielder that has a ginger afro. So, I mean, I got to get extra points for ginger afro, right?
I'll give you points for the gingerness. His lack of soul makes him a better baseball player.
That's right. It's a positive very, very in this true. Case.
I was very heavily leaning towards Chris Bradley winning this debate until Jason brought up the ginger afro, and now I am just moderately leaning towards Chris Bradley. Chris Bradley, you are still the winner of this. Jason Ruggiero, for the second consecutive year, you are the loser of the Tri-State of Mind prospect debate. Sorry.
I think I'd like to point out. I'd like to register a complaint, as they would say.
Yes. Go ahead. I would be the one you're registering this complaint to.
That the arguments are being graded by an incredibly biased Pirates fan.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. It pretty much didn't matter what you said during that debate. You were going to lose that no matter what.
All right. Well, till next year.
we'll give it a try next
year. Purposes anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So I think that's gonna wrap up our second annual. We can now say that our second annual Tri-State of Mind Prospect Spectacular. So thanks for listening in today. If you enjoyed what you heard, give us a rate and review on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate that. You can check us out on the web at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at TriStateBB. You can give us an email, tsmbaseball@tristatebb.com. And we look forward to talking to you soon.